Hey, you.
Yeah, you.
If you or someone you know is struggling with anything mentioned on today's program, please, 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 please email me at authentic1@gmail.com. That's AUTHENICK, the number 1@gmail.com. I am available 24/7, 365 to help in any way that I can. I have resources, I have open ears, an open heart, and tons of hope. I've been freely given all these things and would love to give them to you. Be good to yourselves and each other. Follow me on Twitter using the handle @authentic and my dog Marla on Instagram @djmarla.jean.
I can't get these memories out of my mind, and some kind of madness has started to evolve.
Welcome to Authentic, where we get authentic. Yeah! My name is Nicholas Thomas Fitzsimmons Vandenhavel, but most people just call me Nick. And with me, as always, is my dog Marla.
Marla! Come here, baby! Say hello to all of our listeners!
Azul, Blanco, Rojo, Violeta, Amarillo, Anaranjado, Verde y Rosa, una vez más.
All right, that's enough, Marla. Go back to practicing your Rosetta Stone. Anyway, here on Authentic, where we get authentic, we talk about all things recovery. What do I mean by that, all things recovery? Well, what I mean by that is if you are still living and breathing on this earth, you, yes,
you,
are in recovery from something. As for myself, I am in recovery from alcoholism.
I'm an alcoholic!
I'm also a drug addict. I also have bipolar disorder. I have an eating disorder. I'm a compulsive gambler. Really, the list could go on and on and on. However, fortunately for you, the show is not about me. It is about two people. First is my guest, Liz, who will share part two of her story. Second is the one person that I know Liz is going to help by giving her testimony today. If we help one person on today's show, then we have done our job. We are here to tell you that you are not alone. Liz, welcome back. Welcome back. Part two, commence. Liz, at the end of the experience portion of the show, you were talking about when your mom and your dad came over to get you because your husband didn't know what to do with you. Your mom came in and she said to you what?
She said, "Hi, sweetie, are you ready for some help?" I said, "Yes." And my dad dumped out my booze and my mom grabbed my clothes and a toothbrush and some things I might need. They took me home to where I grew up.
Right back where you started.
Yep, to writhe on the floor some more.
So, what did that look like after you went home? What happened?
I was obviously really sad, a lot of tears, not sure if my husband was going to divorce me and keep my son from me, but also feeling very grateful, ready to be done with all the bullshit. Yeah, and so I binge-watched some movies with my dad, a lot of funny movies, and we laughed, and I slept a lot. That night, I had some withdrawals.
What did your withdrawals from alcohol look like?
Well, it was kind of funny. I was like, I can't sleep. I can't fucking sleep. I can't stop thinking. My mind was just racing and my stomach hurt. Felt like I had to throw up the whole night. I couldn't. Kept trying and I couldn't. And then the carpet was moving. I was like, this is like a mushroom trip. I don't know. It was weird. I was like hallucinating. It was weird.
You detoxed at your parents' house.
Yeah.
I don't hear that too often. Usually it's I went to the hospital and they admitted me and I was wearing a smock. My butt was showing.
Right.
They were giving me intravenous saline. That wasn't your experience. What did you feel from your parents when you were detoxing at their home?
I felt like I was in safe hands. I felt like they loved me. They were taking care of me. They weren't judging me, which was great. I needed that. You know, embarrassed.
Why embarrassed?
Just because I
had become
what I had promised myself I never would be.
Did you have to grieve that at all? That old self that said, I will never?
Yeah.
What did your grief from that younger self look like? Because you didn't start drinking until you were 25, and that was something that you said you would never do. You did start smoking pot at 20. What was that like, grieving your younger self that was steadfast on never drinking?
It's funny, I pictured myself a lot as a little girl, and that made me cry a lot. As if I were facing her, I was sorry. It kind of looked like what my mom looked like when she was sorry. And I wanted to be that little girl again, and I wanted to be who that little girl was supposed to grow up to be.
And what was that?
Who I'm starting to look like now. Somebody who was a helper, someone who was strong and there for others, smart, healthy in her mind and in her body. I wanted to be a leader and a positive leader.
My mind is continuing to get blown in this interview. I'm just scratching my head. It's like this woman is 90 days sober, 3 months sober.
Yeah.
You're talking to me like you've been sober for years.
I would say that's probably because my mom and seeing everything she went through, and it was almost like living vicariously through her, watching her recover, and it gave me all this wisdom. And then also being kind of a late bloomer with my addiction, I had those 5 years of not drinking when most of my friends were, and I would still go out and party with them and hang out with them, and I was the sober cab. I loved it. I loved being reliable. So I have that person to tap back into. It's like Hansel and Gretel left breadcrumbs on their trail to follow back, right? So that was a breadcrumb I left for myself, not realizing it, and it was one I could pick right back up in sobriety.
So many people in addiction don't have that opportunity, don't have those breadcrumbs laying in their past, because that has never transpired. They have never gone through any period of sobriety in their life.
Right.
Since they started, how would you tell them to get help being their future selves? The self that they want to be. How would you tell somebody to go about accomplishing that?
That's a good question, Nick.
Thank you.
There's addicts who don't have that chunk of time where they were sober, but everyone has a childhood. Everyone was a kid once. I encourage people to close their eyes and imagine that they're looking at their self when they were 5, let's say, and just face that kid. Be the hero that kid needs.
In essence, instead of being just distraught and guilt-ridden and shamed, just ashamed of who they've become, what you're saying is go tap into that.
Mm-hmm.
Go tap into your authentic self, your genuine, pure self.
Yeah.
No one has ever said that on this program in regards to how would you get help?
Yeah.
Well, most people would say, I'll go to detox, right. Go to treatment.
Right.
For you, it's about going back to the person that you wanted to be, that you said, someday I'm going to be this person. And all of a sudden you get sober and you're discovering that you can be. It's wild what happens when people get sober and they have that idea planted in their head that this is what they could possibly be. And if they stay sober and clean and ask for help, truly anything is possible. When you finished detoxing at your parents' house, what happened next?
My husband came to visit me. He sat on the couch with me, and he was very sweet and understanding, but sad. Both of us were very sad. I said, are you going to leave me? Am I facing a possible divorce here? And he said, he kind of took a deep breath, and he goes, no, I could not leave you. I'm not leaving you. But are you going to drink again? And I said, no, I don't want to, at least that I don't want to. I can't promise forever I'll never drink again. As much as I want to say, no, I won't, you know, I can't sit in sober mind. I have to stay in the middle. And because if you sit in sober mind, it's dangerous. You think you've got it all figured out, and then something blindsides you and you fuck it all up again.
If you do say that, no, I will never drink again, that is an old self. That is the self that said, I will never be like my mom.
Right.
I will never
drink. Yeah. So I kind of explained that to him, and he said, okay, well, if you think he rephrased his question. He's like, you promised to always work on this or want to work on this. And I said, I can promise you I will always want to work on this.
How did you get to work?
So I went to a meeting.
A 12-step meeting?
Yes, a 12-step meeting. I think like the very next day I went with my mom. I shared a little bit about my story and said I think I was like a day or two sober. There was just this warmth in the room and they accepted me and people cried at what I said and everyone hugged me and everyone was so sweet. Got a sponsor.
What's a sponsor?
A sponsor is somebody who holds you accountable, someone who you can confide in when you are feeling weak in your sobriety and you need some help and advice and guidance, someone who guides you through the 12 steps.
How do you find a sponsor? How did you find that guy?
So at the 12-step meeting, there is a question asked and it says, anyone who is a sponsor and willing to sponsor, please raise your hand. And I looked around the room. Actually, this one woman handed me her number, or wrote her number down and handed it to me. And she said, I'm not going to raise my hand. I'm a little overloaded with sponsees, but I'd be willing to sponsor you. I think I texted her the next day and she's still my sponsor.
What else helped you besides going to these 12-step meetings?
She immediately told me I had to do 90 and 90. And that is where you have to go to a meeting every day for 3 months. I did that. Covered myself in sobriety. I found little things to do. If I felt like, oh man, I really wish I could like smoke some pot or have a drink, I started reading. I've read 12 books.
That is a great substitute to smoking pot.
You can definitely lose yourself in a book.
You
it's
can
amazing.
Have an addiction to books.
I
fine.
Love it.
That is just fine.
And hot baths. So many hot baths. I don't know what it is about them, but it's just that space alone. And I love the warmth. One of the biggest tools I like to use is roll the tape. If I get to a dangerous point where I'm like, man, I just once, it's fine. I can, you know, and I feel myself wanting to look around for something, I roll the tape and I say, okay, but if you do this, you're gonna have so much guilt and you're gonna regret it and you're gonna fall back into that person who you're trying to not be anymore and you're gonna get farther away from that young little kid that you were or the person who you're trying to be now.
The tools that you're using, the people that are helping you, it sounds like you are still seeking that comfort that you got from that first hit of weed,
mm-hmm.
that comfort that you got from that first sip of drank,
mm-hmm.
that comfort that you got from a man or mm-hmm. a boy,
mm-hmm.
whatever, depends on depending on what age you are.
Right.
I'm not saying that you are any sort of sexual predator
right.
at all.
No.
I mean, I don't know you that well.
No,
but
no.
I guess it was implied. Instead of using those things to soothe you, you are finding new things to replace that with. You said that you had some sort of religious thing going on in your childhood
mm-hmm.
that you renounced.
Mm-hmm.
What does your spiritual life look like? Because in this 12-step program that you talk about, it asks you to find this spirituality
mm-hmm.
to rely on, as opposed to relying on one's self or one's drug of choice.
So one of the things that kind of scared me off from 12-step programs is that whole God thing. And
what do you mean that whole God thing?
There's a lot of talk about God and it seemed Catholic to me and I didn't want to become a Catholic again. I want to kind of put it out there that that's a stigma, that it's God as you choose to see him or them. It's your own spirituality. You get to define it. And some people even say, I don't know. And that's my spirituality. I don't know. I don't need to define it. There's just something. What mine looks like in my head right now, what I tap into when I pray or meditate is, do you know the Aurora Borealis?
I do.
It looks like that.
Yeah, it's like the Festival of Lights.
Yes.
But natural.
Right. I tap into something that I believe is the energy that exists in all of the universe, all living things and everything in between, all that dark matter and the energy that exists. And it looks like the Aurora Borealis, and I imagine myself floating up into it, and I'm talking to it, and it's all the energy that every living thing puts into the earth, spinning around in a beautiful rainbow above our heads. I go up there, put out what I'm struggling with. I ask to harness a little bit, not to get greedy, not too much, just a little bit of that positive energy that exists inside myself, probably in a lot of other people and a lot of other living things, of just love, sobriety, being helpful to everyone else, continuing to put good energy back into it.
The use of this spirituality in 12-step programs allows people, like you said, to choose their own conception of this higher power, of this God, as they choose to call it, for lack of a better term. just to have something across the board, we're just going to call it God. Okay? Mm-hmm. Don't be scared.
Mm-hmm.
How do you wish it would have been phrased so that it wouldn't have scared you off? Because that is something that is heard when people approach 12-step programs.
Mm-hmm.
They hear the word God and they have a negative connotation associated with that and they run off. Mm-hmm. And this program is helping save your life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be something to this God thing.
Mm-hmm.
How would you explain it other than saying God?
The connectedness of all things. I guess I don't know. I don't know what name I would give it.
If you didn't have to give it a name, can you explain how it works in your life?
I can definitely tell the difference between a day I've tapped into it and the day I haven't.
Do you think it would be helpful for newcomers coming to 12-step programs to have this see me? Before you enter see me, and maybe it's a testimonial, someone that takes you aside and gives you the rundown about what's about to happen and this is what they're going to talk about. So give it a chance.
Yeah.
Don't be scared. Do you think that would be helpful?
Absolutely.
What would you say if you were asked to give a testimonial to a person coming to a 12-step program room for the very first time?
I would say, give it a chance. They're going to say God a lot. Pay attention to the fact that after they say God, they typically say a God of your understanding. You get to define this. This is your story. This is your life. This is your spirituality. I think I would also explain to people that spirituality, when you don't have it, there is a void. It's something that we do need to feed as human beings. It's something we do need to tap into to feel whole.
I find it interesting that you said human beings, not just people that struggle with addiction. It's all encompassing, as you put it, that there has to be this safe place, this spirituality that has to be fed. How do you help others recognize their spirituality, or how do you contribute to other people's pursuit of their spirituality?
Oh my God. I'm like 3 months sober.
Gotta be pretty basic then.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
It is a form of prayer. It happens in my car a lot.
Just give me a quick example.
It's in my head and it's more visual. I've always been more of a visual learner and a visual person.
So you don't have to pray with words.
You can, if that's your jam. Absolutely. In my head, I just imagine, like I said, myself physically going into this place where a lot of energy of the world exists, being in it and harnessing positive energy with the intention to put more positive energy back in. Have you ever seen the movie Interstellar?
Yes.
Okay. You know where Matthew McConaughey goes to that place?
Yes.
I guess I can't necessarily answer what it sounds like, but I can tell you what it looks like. And I guess that's another image to give you, where he goes in a way. Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense. Do you want to know where mine is?
What? Yes.
Okay. Know what? I've never told anybody this.
Oh.
Yeah, so you're lucky. I am at the opening, the mouth of this dark, wet stone tunnel, and I can't see behind me. I can't see the other side. It's complete darkness, and I'm standing with my hands and my legs spread wide against the walls of the tunnel. There's thoughts, actions, there's things flowing towards me, all these things that are happening in my life, that could happen in my life, all these things going on in my head that come in and come out. They're sweeping past me. All I can see is this giant tree, this tall grass that's crisp. It's the kind of grass that grows in my parents' backyard. Hear the wind coming, and the wind is my spirit. It blows through me and past me, goes into the tunnel. I can no longer see it. It's past me. All I can see is the sunlight in front of me and this giant tree and this crunchy grass pulled towards me in the wind.
I love it.
I don't know if I did it justice.
That sounds amazing. Gave me goosebumps.
Right on. You are living with your husband and your child. How do you wish to be supported by your husband on your sobriety journey?
I have to say he's doing a great job.
What do you need from him?
I need him to understand what it's like inside my head to be an addict.
How do you get him to understand that?
Well, now that I'm not high or drunk all the time, I'm able to articulate a little better and explain to him it's not me. And this, I'm sorry, this is pertaining to my borderline personality disorder too. It's not me when I get anxious or upset and I take it out on you. It's not intentional even though it totally looks intentional. It's not like I'm unconscious when I'm doing it, but it feels almost like I just see red. Been able to articulate that better to him, and he has come to a better understanding of what it's like to be inside of my head, and he's much more compassionate than back in the day when I was drunk and yelling at him and not making sense trying to explain where I'm at in my head.
Helping him understand this addiction, this piece of your life that mm-hmm. has controlled you, that mm-hmm. has split you apart from your husband, mm-hmm. that split you apart from your child mm-hmm. for a period of time. What would you like him to do action-wise? You help him understand by explaining what it is you're doing, mm-hmm. what it is that's going on inside your head. What do you need from him in order to support you in the physical realm?
Right away in the beginning, I asked that he kept drugs and alcohol nowhere near me. I couldn't know that it was anywhere around because I was too new. And it kind of continues like that. Like, I'm okay if he has beer in the house. That doesn't bother me. But if he's going to have, like, gin or something, I know that there's going to be something in the back of my head. Oh, you could sneak a shot, you know? So I ask him not to bring that in. With pot, kind of the same thing. It's like, I can't have that around. I can't smell it. I'm just going to fiend. So that's what I ask him to do physically. He's been very good about that. You know, he'll have beer in the house. That doesn't bother me for some reason. Beer was never my choice. I wanted the hard stuff.
Beer, it takes a lot of effort.
It does. It's so heavy.
To
it's
get like, drunk off beer, you pee a lot, and it takes like, I don't know, depending on your weight.
Right.
It probably takes like 3 or 4, yeah. 6 or 7, 9 yep. or 10 to actually
yeah.
get the desired effect. Whereas with hard liquor, it's just like,
right, exactly.
Giddy up. And, yep. that's what addicts really want. They want that immediate relief, that yeah. immediate comfort.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking your husband to keep hard liquor and marijuana out of the house, not smoking in the house, so you don't smell it.
Yeah.
Does he still use marijuana?
He does. He does still use marijuana. I can tell if he's smoked it. Sometimes that bothers me, but we've gotten to a point where not in the house. I don't know where he keeps it, which I want it to stay that way. It's not a daily thing. It's once in a while that I can tell, oh, he's smoked some pot.
Do you have conversations about that?
Yeah.
Have you said, hey, can you just let me know if you're gonna go get high?
Yeah, and actually he does now. He lets me know beforehand.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Communication.
Amazing.
It's so beautiful, and I'm kind of awestruck by this. Again, you're 90 days clean and sober, and you're already having these adult conversations with your partner, with mm-hmm. your husband, about if you're gonna get high, like, that's your deal. And I respect, and I know that this is something that you like to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I can't do.
Right.
I can't handle, and I know that about myself.
Right.
That doesn't mean that you have to completely change what you do recreationally to have fun.
Right.
If this enhances your life and
yeah.
it's not a problem for
right.
you, it's so mature. It's like, God damn. Personally, and I'm not married, so obviously that doesn't play into my approach to significant others. It would be much different if I had a wife and all that, and that was established. I have this idea in my head that I cannot. This is definitely some dangerous black and white thinking that I have, and it's cutting me off from certain potential relationships. I have this idea in my head, I will not be with anybody that drinks or uses drugs.
Okay.
In fact, I would prefer to be with somebody that is working a 12-step program
right.
similar to mine. That could change, that could ebb and flow. The idea of kissing someone and tasting alcohol or drugs, I think that would set me off.
Well, and I understand that completely. I think I, again, have an advantage where I watched my parents. For many years, my dad couldn't have alcohol or booze in the house, and he was like, okay. And he didn't. Eventually, my mom was just okay with it. Over time, she was like, you can have stuff in the house. I'm not gonna sneak downstairs and try to drink it. I'm good. I am happy. I kind of watched her do that. It can, you know, she continues to just be this guiding light in my life. She can do it. Maybe one day I'll be like, you know what, sweetie, you gotta stop. You gotta stop for, like, you can't have this around. As of right now, I know what it looks like to be okay with him doing stuff and me not, because I watched my parents.
Relapse is a part of a lot of people's stories that are in recovery. Not everyone's story. It doesn't have to be a thing. However, it does happen. Have you experienced a relapse?
Yes. This whole story led up to December, and I got sober on December 2nd. Then, I think about a month later, I justifying smoking pot again. So I haven't drank since December 2nd, but I did have a relapse with pot. It lasted a couple weeks, I think, and it started where I just smoked once, and I was like, this is gonna be it. I'm saying goodbye to
Was that the idea behind it? I need a proper goodbye?
Yes. I wanted to
You sure
thank
should
my...
had a proper goodbye with booze.
Yeah,
I did too, you know? And it's odd. It's like, well, I didn't have my proper goodbye with Percocet. I didn't have my proper goodbye with cocaine. I didn't have my and I'm just listing all these crazy ideas. I can concede that I've definitely had a proper goodbye with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all these other things out there. Those are these stories that this addict part of us, and it's always going to be a part of us, this addict part of my brain, part of my being, is always going to be there doing push-ups in the parking lot when I'm in a meeting. It's always there waiting for me. And the more I do contribute to what I like to call my sobriety savings, the more I contribute to that, the further I get away from that dude that's doing push-ups in the parking lot that's going to ask me, hey, you want to go have a beer? So in order to make contributions to those sobriety savings, I have to continue to help others. Who helped you when you relapsed?
Well, my husband. He was obviously there to help me relapse a little bit.
He smoked with you?
Yes.
And what did he say to you before you guys smoked?
I kind of explained to him, and this was definitely in my addict mind, like just justifying it and then getting him to believe the justification. And I was like, I need to say goodbye. This drug helped me through so much. I want to say goodbye to the plant, to my green goddess. I got to say thank you and farewell. He was like, okay. And we smoked, and then the next day I smoked without him knowing, and then a week went by because I had work, and I was like, nope, done, that's it. And then the next weekend I wanted to smoke again. I was like, see, this is fine, I'm just doing it on the weekends. And then it just unraveled, and then it was becoming a daily thing for about 3 days, and then I was like, all right, this. And then at one point we were at my parents' house, and my mom asked me to speak at a 12-step meeting in a year you can speak at this one. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And the guilt set in. Went home, and my husband said, how do you feel about lying about this? And immediately, fuck you! Like, you said it was okay! And,
oh, it's always somebody else's fault.
Right. And then I broke down, and then I stopped, and I was like, oh my god, you're right. And I can't put this blame on you. And I texted my sponsor, which was the hardest thing to do, because I thought she was gonna, like, disown me as a sponsee, and, you know, all this stuff. But all she said was, it was very brave that you said this. It's very brave that you told me. I know it's hard. I'm glad that you want to stop and get back into it. You know, I'm here.
There's this saying that I love around the meetings, around the rooms of these 12-step programs, and it's, we don't shoot our wounded.
Right.
I love that saying because it really encompasses what these 12-step programs are putting out into the world. We get it. It hurts. Shit happens. It's hard. The most important thing is that you get honest and you get back into it. And it's so cool that your explanation of that relapse explains the whole idea behind recovery, is that I can't unknow what I currently know.
Right.
And nothing feels right. Nothing feels right when I'm doing X, Y, or Z.
And I can't get right when I have that sitting in the back of my head.
Who do you need to get right with?
My spirituality, myself, my family, the people who are holding me accountable, everyone.
How have you been able to stay clean and sober today? I'm talking about this day, today.
Yeah, like today?
Today?
Just today. Okay. Well,
what is it? May...
I don't even know.
10th.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
This morning I did a 12-step Zoom meeting. It's an all-women's meeting. Not that I don't like meetings with everybody. There's something about the all-women's meeting that I really like too. Just starting my day that way. It just helps. It just gets me in the right spot, and I feel exhilarated afterwards. I take naps on the weekends, and it's so nice. I sleep so much, and it's sound sleep, and it's so nice. You know, reading the book sometimes when I need to, and praying when I need to, and looking into my son's face. Oh, he's just hilarious. He gets me through every day. He's so funny. And just watching the world through his eyes. It's like being a kid again yourself.
What I heard from your description of your day was two things. Self-care, that is so important.
Yes.
I heard service and self-care. Those two things tend to be so key in my everyday life. If I can be of service in one way, if I can get out of my own way, if I can get outside of myself,
mm-hmm.
and I can help myself, it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's this cyclical thing where if I go and help somebody else, it makes me want to help myself so I can help other people.
Mm-hmm.
And round and round and round we go.
Yeah.
It's just like that cyclical thing that comes from using, from drinking and mm-hmm. using drugs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I feel bad, I feel shitty, I feel sad, so I use this drug. And then when I'm done using this drug, I feel guilty because I've used this drug.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel sad because I've used this drug. I shouldn't be using this drug. And then I use that drug to get rid of that feeling.
Right.
Round and round and round and round we go.
Yeah.
You found this different cycle. How are you helping others to get into that cycle? You said you go to 12-step meetings. What do you do in those 12-step meetings to help people get into or stay in that cycle?
I share my experience. I teach by example instead of trying to force someone. Reaching out, positive comments to people who've shared as well, encouragement to other people. With my husband and my son, if I get upset, if I get frustrated and I start taking it out on my husband, I catch myself and I apologize, hold myself accountable for my actions, and I take responsibility for them. And that helps him with his own cycles. With my son, I want to be a good example for him so that when he gets older and he goes through his struggles, he can think back and be like, how did mom deal with this? How did mom do this? I'm gonna do that.
Again, I am just blown away by this maturity and this selflessness that just falls from you. It's so weird. It's like you're shedding selflessness. It's and not like gross like snake skin.
Right.
It's just kind of like
cool.
It's like little breadcrumbs.
Yeah, I like
little
that.
Crumbles that I'm gonna leave behind. It's like, follow me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Follow me.
That's something my grandmother, we have a very big family, and people always say that she would tell them, if they're not listening to you, just walk towards what you're trying to get them to do, and they will follow. So basically the message is, stop talking at them, just go do it, and they'll see how great it is for you, and they'll want to be in that space too.
What was your grandmother's name?
Barbara.
Wise Barbara.
Yes.
Love it. All right, we are going to take one more break, and then Liz is going to talk about my favorite four-letter word! No, it's not fuck. It's hope. We just had a really good time. Welcome back! I was trying out these new, like, welcome back things. They were just terrible. I did Foghorn Leghorn and, like, the gal from the Popeye's chicken commercial. Love that chicken from Popeye's. Go for some fried chicken right now. We have finally made it into the hope section of the program. My favorite four-letter word, H-O-P-E, hope. Liz, when you first got sober, that day that your mom and your dad came to pick you up and take you home, what hope did you have to hold on to? What was it that kept you going those very first couple of days?
My son being what he needs me to be. Because I know in reality, he's gonna grow up. Growing up is fucking hard, man. I have to be this strong woman for him. And when I'm not, when I'm feeling weak or having trouble, I have to let him see that so he can see me come out of it. That excited me. That gave me hope and a purpose.
Your son grows up and he's an addict and an alcoholic. Clearly, this is hypothetical. He's 2.5 years old. But let's just say, heaven forbid, nobody likes to have these hypotheticals. But
I mean, it's more
about you and what you've learned. So that's why I'm throwing this out there.
Yeah.
Let's say your son grows up and you recognize that he's an alcoholic and a drug addict. How do you approach him? When do you approach him? What do you say to him to give him some hope that whatever it is he's dealing with, drugs and alcohol, they're not the answer. What do you say to your son?
I would do something similar to what my mom did in more recent years when she was sober, deep into her sobriety. She was starting to notice me falling into my own addictions. And she didn't tell me that I was an addict. She didn't tell me I was an alcoholic. She never said, you need to go to a meeting. You need to get help. She just made it so that I knew she was there when I needed her. That's what I would want to do for my son. I can't make him do anything. It's that lead by example again. I can't force it. That might make him run from me further. I just need him to know I am here. His dad is here. We are that safety net for him to fall into and ask for help from when he's ready.
So many people that struggle with addiction die.
Mm-hmm.
People are falling off, man. They're falling off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And it's insane how many people are dying every day from addiction. A lot of people just aren't fucking talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh yeah, another guy died from heroin overdose.
Right.
Oh, I heard they're lacing heroin with fentanyl and that's why these kids are dying.
Right.
And that's all they fucking say.
Yeah.
That's all they say.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to be a person in the world that spreads the message of hope? That spreads the message of help, not just in your family, not just in your little clutch, in your bubble of sobriety that is wonderful. You have this community. That's what helps you with your day to day. What are you going to do so that people aren't dying?
Holy shit.
What are you going to do? It has to start somewhere.
I think mental health is a big thing that needs to be addressed more, especially for kids. There should be DBT therapy. It should be in middle schools for children. They give you these worksheets to work on, to work through your strong emotions that you don't understand, to help you understand them. And I think that needs to be in school, in the curriculum.
So these DBT skills, what did that DBT process look like for you?
There's homework. I had one group meeting a week and one one-on-one meeting a week with my therapist. And then I'd get homework and there were little skills. One of them was stop. And it was just, you had to stop, assess the situation, come back to it after you've calmed down, in so many words. And there were a bunch of them. There were, you know, there was weigh the pros and cons. There, you know, there was just, I have a book at home that I keep in my room, and so that if I need to pull it out, I can. And that's something that I want to have available to my son as he's growing up. And I think it should be available to lots of children so that we can help people address these things at a young age, so that when they get into trouble older, they have something to tap into. They have that knowledge.
I'm not putting this on you like you have to do something.
No,
what I want to know is if that's something that you were going to do, spread this DBT workbook, how do you address a school? How do you do that? What sort of testimonial would you give them to convince them that this is necessary?
Maybe I would start with my story and explain that I didn't have the tools when I was younger. And even though I was leaving these breadcrumbs for myself, I still fell into addiction. Even though I saw everything fall apart, I still became a victim to what was already in my DNA. I would hope that would move them. And I would bring up kind of like what you said. People are dying from this. It's an epidemic. It's not being addressed the way it needs to be. And this is where we can start. These are hard questions, man. I don't know if I'm answering these.
Oh, you're killing it.
Okay.
No, you're killing it. I do ask hard questions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why I ask hard questions. I ask hard questions because it forces you to think about what am I doing today? And it forces me to think about what am I doing today?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, I write down these questions. I come up with these questions not to poke the bear.
Right.
It's to allow the other person to think about something that I'm thinking about that I'm not doing, that I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to hear someone else's side of it. How would you do this? I hadn't thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have more information. I have more skills. I have more things at my fingertips to take that step, to take that leap, to find another person. Say I've helped two people today. Why not three? I'm going to pick a third person to help today. And this is how, from something that Liz told me. For me, I think that's where we're falling short. We're just helping the people that are right in front of our noses. If you have access to certain platforms, then take advantage. Don't be a quote-unquote innocent bystander. Don't watch this shit happen.
Right.
Be a worker among workers. Be present. Be a part of the human race.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be an observer. Observers don't save lives. Liz, why aren't you one of the statistics that exist? So many people are dying from overdose, suicide, accidents related to drug and alcohol use. You very easily could have been one of those. I could have very easily, I should have been one of those, but I'm not. Why do you believe you are not one of those statistics? Why are you still here?
Oh, man. There's got to be a reason, maybe to do this podcast today so that this person A over here or this person B over here hears it and says, oh shit, that's me. I got to get myself right. And maybe little things like that will continue to happen. The more I go to these 12-step meetings and share my message and share whether it's my story or what I'm feeling that day, and someone relates to it, a newcomer relates to it, and it changes their world.
I love the phrase it's escaping me that I can't remember who said it. The opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection.
Mm.
It's so true. How I connect matters. Every little thing I do matters. I'm a human being. I am fallible. Today, am I going to do more good than bad? I guess that's what it really boils down to. Am I going to help one more person? Am I going to show up? Am I going to wave to somebody if they let me into the lane in traffic? Am I going to smile at somebody that's looking very sad? Am I going to say hello and give a cigarette to a person holding a sign on the side of the road and ask them their name? I didn't do that today. I don't know why I didn't. Sometimes I do. What if? What if I did that every time? What if? That's where real change comes from, is those little inklings inside me that say, oh, you know what? I should do that. And then I don't. If my first thought is kindness, love, compassion, maybe I should act on it. And if I do, this weird service cycle thing happens where if I get outside of myself and I help someone else, all of a sudden I get a tap on the shoulder and it says, hey, remember that thing you were having a really hard time with? Well, here's a solution. You can choose to pick it up. You have the skills. That's how it works. Liz, I want to play a quick little game.
I want to play.
I am a 29-year-old woman. I have been on a week bender. My husband and child have left. Does this story sound familiar at all?
Yeah, vaguely.
Vaguely, okay. So I'm you.
Okay.
But I'm not you.
Okay.
What do you, what should her name be?
Emily.
Emily. Okay, that's one of my sister's names. Oh. Excellent. So my name is Emily. I'm 29 years old. I've been drinking for a week. My husband has left me. My child is gone with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2.5 years old. I've lost these things and I have nobody else. I don't have a mom that's a recovered alcoholic. I don't have a dad that's there to love me and take care of me and come to my house and ask me, are you ready for help? I'm that person, and you get a call. You get a call from someone that says, I got just the girl for you that has gone through the same exact thing. It's crazy. This woman is like living your life.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Emily. Could you go over and just talk to her? My name is Emily. What would you say to me?
I would tell you it's okay.
Look at me. I know, it's a weird game.
Man.
Honestly, though, look at me. My husband and my child are gone. I don't have anybody left. I can't stop drinking. All I want to do is drink, and all I want to do is stop drinking.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do? I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me.
I would tell you it's okay. You don't have to be embarrassed in front of me. I have been you. I have been there. This is not you. You can stop. I would ask you to come with me to a 12-step meeting, tell you to give it a try. Maybe I wouldn't say much at all. Maybe I would just hold you, cry with you, and just tell you it's gonna be okay.
That to me sounds like the opposite of addiction.
What do you mean?
That sounds like connection.
Mm. It made me think of Robin Williams. hugging. You can edit this out if you need to.
No, I'm excited to see where this goes.
Hugging Matt Damon, saying, it's not your fault.
Yes!
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
You know what movie that is?
Yeah, it's the name is escaping me right now.
Come on. It's not bad, but...
Good Will Hunting.
There you go, see? God, we should go on a game show.
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to address your mental health real quick. You expressed that you have been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. Are you on any medication for that?
No, I'm not.
Is there medication available for people that are struggling with that?
I'm sure there is, but I don't know what it would be.
How are you getting help with that? Do you still get help with that today?
I think my 12-step program is perfect for it. I did love DBT in a lot of ways, but at the same time, I would have appreciated it more as a young kid because it's like worksheets and homework, and it's kind of like you have a therapist who's got a watchful eye over you, whereas now it's in my 12-step programs, I feel like the 12 steps help me address problems that come directly from my borderline personality disorder more than DBT did as an adult.
So what you're saying is this 12-step program is all-encompassing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just solve your drinking and drugging problem.
Right.
It doesn't really solve anything.
Right.
It's a design.
Yeah, design for living, yeah.
It's mm-hmm. a recipe.
Yeah, yeah.
You can fucking bake. You can follow directions.
Yeah.
And there's 12 directions.
Mm-hmm.
We're baking a 12-layer cake.
Yes.
When you bake that 12-layer cake, what is it really that you get out of it?
I get happiness. And that I've been a sad person for a lot of my life. I've always wondered, what's wrong with me? Why can't I just be happy? And that's, you know, why I drank and smoked, because they made me happy. In this 12-step program, I get so happy. I remember I was a couple weeks sober. It was my brother's wedding. No, a couple days sober. It was my brother's wedding weekend. I was kind of going over some writing from my 12-step program. I felt like I was like a soda in a pop can, and I was just fizzing with this just happiness emanating from me as I was reading about the 12-step program, that connection you make with the people in those rooms. I immediately have unconditional love for them all because, I don't know, there's just such a connection, and that brings me happiness. So yeah, happiness.
How are you spreading that unconditional love to people that are not in a 12-step program?
At work, it can be kind of stressful. I work at a funeral home. There's a lot of different personalities, and there's a lot at stake with what we're doing. You know, we need people they're in fragile places. They just lost a loved one. They are so sad. They're in grief. My job is to bring understanding and compassion and connection in a professional manner to people who are strangers, and then also to my coworkers who I don't know how their day has looked. I might get kind of pissed off at this funeral director because they didn't do this on their, so now I got to do their, you know, I got to pick up their slack. If I look at it that way, of course I'm going to be upset and it's going to ruin my day. But if I look at it as like, oh man, we're all juggling 50 million things in our heads every day at this job. This person probably had to go embalm someone and, you know, do a bunch of other things. And I stop myself and I take a minute and I realize they're a human being too. They've had a day outside of me. I can pick up this slack. It's not a big deal. Or if I can't, I can reach out and ask someone else in the company for help.
That sounds like a lot of we and very little, if any, me. Let's explore me.
Okay.
Question that I always ask, and you are an avid listener, so you know exactly what I'm going to ask you.
I've got my notes.
Oh, shit. I told you, be authentic and genuine. Don't script your
just
shit.
Just kidding.
You better stare into my eyes during this whole answer.
No, I know. It's
Liz, as a human being on this earth, what do you want your legacy to be? How do you want to be remembered as a human being?
I want to be remembered as someone who led by example, which we've kind of already addressed. I want to be remembered as a peacemaker. There's so much going on in the world, and there's religion versus science in a lot of conversations I hear. There's friendships being broken up over political disagreements. I want to be that person who can step into those conversations, have an open heart to both sides, and help those people find the commonalities rather than the differences to reach a point of understanding that they don't agree and it's okay. They can still be friends. friends. There's more to gain from their relationships with each other. And I want to help people in little ways with that. And I want to be remembered for that. And I also want to be remembered as someone with healthy humility. Someone who doesn't think the sun shines out her ass or who doesn't think she knows everything. Has confidence and holds herself accountable for her own actions.
One word comes to mind when I listen to you talk. And that's grace. Feel this grace.
Thank you.
Effortless, honestly.
Thank you.
Pretty beautiful to watch. And that can only be explained by a human being that is connected with an unbelievable spiritual side. There's this earthly and unearthly mashup that you got going on that's just, it's just beautiful.
Sweet.
Yeah, you're killing it. Okay, Liz, thank you.
Thank you.
So much for being on Authentic, where you most certainly have gotten authentic. I'm filled with gratitude. Thank you so much. You've given me a full heart tonight.
Thank you. This has helped me so much.
And I know that you have helped one person tonight.
I hope so.
I know so. And that means that we have done our job.
Always here on Authentic, where we get authentic, we have to pay credit where credit is due. To open the show, as always, you heard
Mad Madness
by Muse. Then we got into Liz's lyrical picks. At the first break, you heard I Feel It All by Feist. And to take us off into our own worlds, you will hear Not Just Knee Deep by Funkadelic, written by George Clinton.
Liz, before I send us off and do my magical punchline, what do you want your sign-off line to be? The show is coming to an end. We've had a magical time and...
So my son likes this. It's not really a line.
This is a horrible. Like, you're explaining it. Just fucking say it. I don't care.
Pearls are mummified parasites.
You heard
it. If you feel like a parasite, don't worry.
You heard it here first, folks, that pearls are just mummified parasites. And always, be good to yourselves. It's important.
One to hold the gun, I know more than